Hello, movie friends. Welcome back to Letterboxd Recap, where we go through all the movies you've been watching, as well as rating the Letterboxd top four of five of you listeners. Today, we're going to talk about movies like Poor Things, Boys in the Boat, All of Us Strangers, and Attack on Titan, which I have been binging all month. Natalie, thank you for joining.
It's me, James.
It's James here. I'm not sure if you've seen Attack on Titan, have you?
No, I've only seen like clips of it, and I've heard people rave about it.
So I started watching it 2 weeks ago, and I'm already at the last two finale episodes. So it's like 90 episodes or so, and then it has two finales. One's an hour long, and then one's an hour and a half long. And from what I've heard, they're epic. They're like little movies. But the show is absolutely phenomenal. I've heard so much hype about it, and it does live up to it. And I'm getting more into anime. I've only seen a few things. This is my second TV show anime, because I've seen Avatar Last Airbender.
Oh my god.
But I grew up on Pokemon and Dragon Ball Z, so that's a lie.
Oh yeah, that counts.
I've seen those. So I'm absolutely just floored by this show. It is incredible. The writing, the characters, the animation's phenomenal. And it's just a story that is so rich with detail and character work, and it's dynamic imagery and really cool ideas and big themes that they weave together. And it, on top of that, it keeps you completely guessing what's going to happen next with incredible twists. So I'm really excited. I'm going to watch the finales tomorrow. So I'm finally going to know how it ends. But oh my God, I'm not sure if I'm emotionally ready.
I just know you don't leave your house.
Rarely. Well, I went to Trader Joe's in the gym yesterday.
It's not like you said you went to church today. I'm like, you went where?
Yeah, I did my errands. So that was me leaving the house for the week.
Yes.
No, but I go on my daily walks. Otherwise, I'm crazy.
Yeah.
I'm a homebody. Yeah. All right, let's get into a couple of unsubscribes before we get into our Letterboxd top four from fans. So, first unsubscribe this week was Ocean Roars on Spotify commented, "I became a patron subscriber this month because of James." Unsubscribed.
Subscribe, unsubscribe.
I love it, all over the place. Then we have Gabsant Music wrote, in our movie news episode last week, missed opportunity because I did it solo. And they wrote, missed opportunity for Anthony to film himself as James and do the podcast a la Lindsay Lohan in The Parent Trap. Unsubscribed.
Dude.
That's way too much work.
What were you thinking?
Way too much work.
I would have to commit to the bit.
I would have to write a whole script.
I could have helped you.
A 30-page script? Oh, my God. Well, maybe we can make that
next
happen.
Next time.
Maybe.
Yeah.
I mean, if, with your help. It would.
What the hell am I here for if I'm not lying to your audience?
Actually, I know. Maybe we could do that. I'll have to take on a nasally voice. Hey, James here. Hey, everybody, it's James here.
I do not condone this.
And then next up, Curtis Henry wrote, Mickey 17 is not coming out in 2024. Unsubscribed from our most anticipated movies of the year episode. Yeah, we didn't realize this, but Mickey 17 isn't coming out till 2025. They didn't even pick a release date, Warner Brothers, so they just shelved it. So we don't know when we're going to see Bong Joon-ho's next film at all.
You know why?
They said strikes prevented them from finishing work and post-production and not filming, but we'll see. I mean, delaying it indefinitely without even picking a date is not a good sign for anything.
Yeah.
So maybe they're just looking for the right date in 2025. We'll find out. And then P. Kelly wrote, we did a Discord watch party of Surf's Up.
That's so funny.
On Sunday. And they wrote, but you really have to schedule a watch party to one of the greatest movies ever made at the same time of one of the biggest NFL playoff games. Unsubscribed. Sorry, pal. Then R. Pool on TikTok wrote, there's this viral clip on TikTok of a DJ made a Dark Knight mix at the club. It's pretty epic. And they wrote, if you don't use this outro music on an episode, I'm going to unsubscribe.
Let's hit up the DJ.
I replied, this is my new gym track because it's that intense. It's great. All right, let's get into what we've been watching this week. So the first movie I watched was an award season favorite and darling, All of Us Strangers, starring Andrew Scott and Paul Mescal, as well as Jamie Bell and Claire Foy. I was wondering, because this had a lot of attention online, and I was wondering why I didn't get any awards recognition from anyone in terms of even nominations, because it looked like an awards favorite. Its trailer, its content, it seemed like, you know, this is kind of what's in right now.
Yeah, I mean, I've only heard of it through word of mouth. Mm-hmm. I didn't see any promo for it, so I didn't know it existed.
It just came out a couple weeks ago, and I finally saw it. It actually was pretty underwhelming, And I gave it 3 stars. Yeah, I was actually, I was 3 stars for me. It wasn't bad, but it was just, it wasn't what I was expecting. So All of Us Strangers, I gave 3 stars and wrote an original ghost story with exquisite performances from its talented cast. All of Us Strangers approached its supernatural premise with sincerity and honesty as the theme of confronting the past permeated the story. Ultimately, the narrative left a lot to be desired. It never quite reached the potential of its brilliant premise. I love everyone involved. Even the director, I just watched his TV series, The North Water, with Colin Farrell, and it was fantastic. But ultimately, the movie, in my, I don't want to spoil it for anyone who hasn't seen it because it just came out, but the story just didn't quite live up to expectations. And has a really fantastic concept for an idea. And it never, he never really pulled much out of it. And it was honestly kind of, it kind of flatlined in terms of story, where not much really was happening.
Yeah.
And you get the, if you, anyone's seen the trailer, it's about this guy who, he starts a relationship with another man in his apartment building, while at the same time, he's visiting the childhood home he grew up in, and is seeing the ghosts of his parents, who, they died when he was 12. This is all in the trailer. And so he's like visiting them, like they're, it's like normal, like they're having dinner, they know he's an adult, and he's just like spending time with his parents who are ghosts. Really great setup, but it just never left that, unfortunately. So I was actually pretty underwhelmed when I saw the movie.
Well, three stars. But give it 3 stars.
I gotta be honest.
That was harsh, man.
Hey, six out of ten is not that bad.
It's not that your bad. Your harsh is really nice.
Yeah, that's. Yeah. I can't. It's hard for me to give anything under the 3.
I give half stars, man.
Yeah. You gave Happening a half star. I would give The Happening a half star.
I give a lot of things half star. I'm just kidding. I give a lot of things 2.5 to 3.5.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's different on Letterboxd. And James is definitely harsher than I am.
What I do is that I rate it really fast before I can see anyone else's rating. So I don't get...
You don't want to be influenced by it because it absolutely happens.
It happens all the time. Like, if I see it first, I'm like, fuck. Because then I start to like wonder, like,
and I don't want to be like an outcast.
Yeah, not that anyone's even looking at my letterbox, but no, I start to question my judgment, which is good sometimes, but also.
But it's tough because the perception is very important. And honestly, before I gave All of Us Strangers 3 stars, I was like, I hope I don't piss anyone off with this.
I hate that you have to think about that.
This is the way it is. It's the way it is. People are so harsh online.
Come on, guys.
People are like unaccepting of. Like a bad review of something they like or a good review of something they hate.
I think there are worse things and better things in the world that we could be upset or really happy about. And I just don't think that someone's Letterboxd review is warrant of like, it warrants a bad reaction.
I completely agree.
Yeah.
Fortunately, that's not
the
case.
We can do better, you guys.
Okay. What was the first film you watched this week, Nat?
Well, I just want to brag.
Oh, yeah.
I watched more movies than you this week.
How many?
7.
Damn.
Yeah, I was on it. I was on it. Well, one was a short film, so.
But I did watch 25 hours of Attack on Titan.
Well, that's you. That's you not leaving the house.
Legit.
So my first one is Hotel Mumbai.
Oh, yes. You tell
that
me
that one. Actually, nay. I watched The Wrong Trousers first.
How good is
funny.
That?
Funny. It's so cute. It's so funny that the penguin has no emotion, never shows an ounce of emotion, but like the music kind of feeds it to you, but it makes it funnier. It's so good.
He doesn't even say anything.
He never says a word, never gives a single emotion.
Wasn't it just such a good short film?
It was really good.
I adored it. It was great. I'm glad you watched it.
It was really, really fun. Yeah.
So well done, too.
Well done.
The music is incredible.
But Hotel Mumbai.
Now, who's in this movie again?
Dev Patel and Armie Hammer.
Gotcha.
But the movie made me cry like 8 times.
What's the historical event it's based on?
So in 2008, there were terrorist attacks on India and on like in 12 places. And one of them was the Taj Hotel. And so this movie focuses on the hotel.
Okay, hence the title.
I thought it was really good. But then I go into Letterboxd.
It doesn't have very good ratings anywhere. Yeah.
No.
Yeah.
So I'm like.
You gave it 5 stars.
No, hell no. I give like very few things 5 stars.
What'd you give this?
I gave it a 4.
Nice.
Which is really good for me. But also, this is where, you know, I I think about it and I'm like, why is my rating higher than others? What are other people's, like,
that happens, you know, a lot with
point
me.
Of view? I'm like, am I not seeing something? Did they do something wrong? Because I know, I think there was some discourse about, like, how they treated the event, but I was like, mm-hmm. I think they.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
I don't think they weaponized it, but I don't think I looked deep enough.
I mean, I'm dealing with that where I gave Maestro 4.5 stars, and I'm, mm-hmm. I think I'm the only person alive who gave it 4.5 stars.
You're one of the few who really loved it.
I was blown away by it. I think it's so good. I think it'll age really well.
Yeah, but I also love that we all have different opinions.
Yeah.
You know, even though.
I saw someone online say, like, how dare, like, they nominate Maestro for cinematography. I'm like, did you see the movie? It's stunning. Even if you don't like it, you can't deny how beautiful that film is.
Yeah, things can be two different things, you know?
Let's get into the Letterboxd top 4 of 5 of you listeners. So first up, we have Caden Tapscott, all the way in Portsmouth, New Hampshire, New England boy. Caden has After Sun, great film.
The trailer looked really good.
Oh, you get to see it. It's fantastic. Then we got The Departed. No surprise here. No surprise from a New England boy. Then we have Rebel Without a Cause. Incredible film. Great performance by James Dean. And then, ooh, I love this one. The Apartment by Billy Wilder. One of the great romance movies of all time. It's really sensational. Just all-time film. All-time. I saw it for the first time this year, and there was so much hype built up around it, and it really does live up to that hype. It's great. Sensational.
Now, can you spell Wilder?
W-I-L-D-E-R.
That's what I thought.
Wilder. Or as Caden would say, Wilder.
Wilder.
And recently, Caden's watched a lot of great classic movies, To Kill a Mockingbird, Laura, Metropolis, and Last Picture Show. Great stuff, man. All right, next up, we have Kyle Shaw. Their Letterboxd top 4 is The Cloverfield 10 Cloverfield Lane. Good spinoff. Really good spinoff of Cloverfield. There was another spinoff called Cloverfield Paradox, which was terrible.
Wait, Cloverfield Lane was when they're underground, right?
Yeah, underground.
And then the Paradox is when they're in space.
Yes.
Okay.
So they just like, what location should be next? The ocean? The Cloverfield ship. Mm-hmm. But the Paradox was awful, but 10 Cloverfield Lane was surprisingly fantastic. John Goodman, he should have been like nominated for every award because of that performance. It was that great. Next up, we have Captain America, The Winter Soldier. Top tier Marvel movie. Absolutely. Then we got Dune Part 1. Kyle, I think you might throw Dune Part 2 on your list too after you see it this year. And then we got Oppenheimer.
That's a good one.
Which I just saw again last week. And it's just unbelievable. And he's been on a bit of a Nolan marathon with Memento, The Prestige, and then Across the Spider-Verse and Deep Water, which I haven't seen yet. Next up, we have Eliza Ward. Top 4 is The Coneheads.
The Coneheads?
Yeah, it's a great SNL skit from the 80s starring Dan Aykroyd started it, and then they made, I think, 2 films out of it.
Oh, my God.
It was like one of the early SNL movie hits. Then we have, oh, my God, Eliza, The Talented Mr. Ripley, one of my faves.
Great.
What a great film. Oh, my God, I love that movie. Then another one, Catch Me If You Can. Wow.
That's with the, what's his face?
Yeah, what's his face? Which one do you mean, Tom or Leo?
Leo. Yeah. See, Leo and what's his face?
Tom Hanks?
No.
Gyllenhaal?
No.
Damon?
Yes.
They actually do look pretty similar.
That's what I'm saying. When they're younger, they look a lot alike. It's hard for me to figure it out.
They have, I wouldn't say similar faces, but similar eyes for sure.
Yeah.
They do, especially in The Departed when they're together. They do, they look like they could be brothers.
Yeah, or
in
like
that
at
movie.
Least like cousins, you know?
Yeah. But you're right. They have pretty similar features in terms of the eyes and nose. But mm-hmm. man, I hope DiCaprio makes another movie with Spielberg again. That would be fantastic. Then we got Parasite.
Good one.
One of the best films of the century, without a doubt. And then recently, Eliza has watched Red, White, and Royal Blue, the TV show on Amazon, The Nice Guys, Boy Erased, and Amantee. I hope I said that right.
Canceled. Canceled.
All right, next up, the fourth Letterboxd we have is Will Does Films. Will's Letterboxd top 4 is Dr. Strangelove, The Heartbreak Kid, Nice, Battle of Algiers, amazing movie. And The Graduate, one of the great, great movies of the 60s. Amazing film. Really huge debut for Dustin Hoffman. And then recently, they've watched The Piano from director James Campion. 30 Minutes or Less. That Adam Driver, the something report. They cross it out on the title. I can't remember what it's called.
Oh, my God.
I think it's just called The Report, actually. And then Barbie.
Terrible.
All right, our final top four is from Alex Smith. This is a great top four. Kangaroo Jack. Classic. Dune. Oppenheimer. And Babylon. And Alex made this really cool orange color tone palette for all of his posters. Really cool stuff. I love this. I got to do a new poster setup.
I need a poster setup, but I got to pay money for that.
Well, you can use our coupon code at Raiders at movieposters.com to get 10% off your plug. Shameless plug. All right. My next watch was actually the same day as All of Us Strangers. I heard very good things about The Boys in the Boat, George Clooney's new film, which is a great sports drama. And I just had I was just feeling so down about All of Us Strangers because it's a very heavy movie.
Really?
It's very heavy and it's very sad. And I was like, I'm going to go see The Boys on the Boat. So I saw it right after and it was late. It was like 9:30. And it was exactly what I wanted because I love underdog sports dramas. There's a kind of genre of film that I grew up loving. And this is one of those and it hit all the right beats. I gave it 4.5 stars.
Wow.
And I wrote, George Clooney's best film as a director, and he's made some good ones. This hits all the right beats for a sports drama and has an incredible feeling of old Hollywood in its tone and style. The excellent cinematography and production design was bolstered by wonderful music from the always reliable Alexandre Desplat, one of the greatest composers working today. And it was just like, it has terrible ratings because people call it cliche, and they say it's just another run-of-the-mill sports movie. The thing is, like, it's a sports movie about underdogs. It's gonna have the same sequences and same beats as any other sports movie. But, I mean, do they do something different with it? And is it a new story? Absolutely. And I found it very inspiring. It's about the JV squad of rowers at Washington University who were a bunch of nobodies. And they were the JV squad of their school. Like, they were the lower tier. And they became such a strong unit and such hard workers that they end up going to the Olympics. And
this is a true story?
Yeah, true story. And they rowed at the Olympics in Berlin.
Wow.
And I won't spoil the ending. I won't spoil it.
I'm going to look it up. The historical event.
But it was just perfect. It was for what it was. You have to be able to separate, like, you can't judge Twilight the same way you judge Oppenheimer the same way you judge, like, The Boys in the Boat, in my opinion. It's like, this is a sports movie. You don't want to compare it to Poor Things.
Right.
How is it as a sports movie? And in my opinion, this movie and also Gran Turismo, the racing movie that came out last year, were fantastic. Fantastic.
So, so good. I love.
Thank you. Another person who loves Gran Turismo.
People didn't like it?
Nobody liked it.
What?
I posted on Twitter, like a quick little snippet review of saying it was like an incredible film. I wrote it was the most underrated film of the year, Gran Turismo, because it's only like a 3.1 on Letterboxd. Oh, if that,
I don't think I rated it. Oops.
And a bunch of people asked me if I was joking. For some reason, it's hated and just not liked whatsoever. But I loved it, and I loved it for the same reasons that I loved The Boys in the Boat. It's a sports film. Obviously, there's going to be the same things you've seen before in other sports films, but outside of that, it's a new story. And I mean, I just like to sit back and try to enjoy a film as much as I can. And if it hits, even if it's a cliched story, it can still be fun and it can still be entertaining and it can still be inspiring.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember because after watching it, I did have some qualms with it, but nothing major.
It's not a perfect movie.
No, yeah. I think there were some moments where like we didn't need that, or I wish it was more of this, or maybe the acting was a bit.
I mean, yeah, I gave it 4 stars because I mean it's not a 5-star movie, but
so
like
funny.
There's cliches, yeah, and it's a little melodramatic, but you know what? The movie still really worked.
I really enjoyed it.
I had a great time at Gran Turismo.
Interesting. See, I thought that Gran Turismo was that snail movie.
3.2 on Letterboxd.
Do you know what snail movie I'm talking about?
Snail movie. Oh yeah, with the animated one.
Yeah. thought Gran Turismo was that movie for so long. Oh my God. And then I watched, I'm like, oh, wait.
What's that movie called? Snail Turismo?
Okay, let me look it up.
No, I doubt that. There's no way they got the rights to the Turismo name. It's a brand. Oh, my God, Snail Turismo. But just like I loved Gran Turismo, I loved Boys in the Boat.
Turbo.
I remember, yeah.
How did I get that wrong? Oops.
I don't know.
Embarrassing.
All right, what was your next watched movie?
My next watched movie... Oh, Society of the Snow.
Oh, how was it? I haven't seen it yet.
It is bleak. They do a really great job of building you up and then tearing you down and doing that over and over and over again. And you feel, I mean, obviously no one can feel like the boys or the people who endured it, but they almost put you in there where it's hopeful, you know? Mm-hmm. And then... the hope dies. And
just like oh, the
we,
men.
We can... Yeah, exactly.
Like there's a little thing, oh, we might be able to get out. No, yes, we're not going to get out.
Yeah, and then someone else dies, and then so you're slowly dying.
I've actually seen another version of this story.
The OG one, Alive. Ethan Hawke, right?
Ethan Hawke. I remember seeing that as a kid, and it being really impactful and just really... I really liked it, but I remember it being pretty disturbing because, as we all know, they resorted to cannibalism.
Yeah, I... Okay. I love cannibalism because it is such a, like, I don't think it'll ever be okay. Mm-hmm. But side note, there's this book called Tender is the Flesh. I recommend everyone
read
it.
I've heard that.
Yes. I think it's an Argentinian author, but that book is crazy, but deals with cannibalism. Mm-hmm. But it's something that will never be okay. And it won't be normalized. You can't really make a case for it unless you're in a situation where it's life or death. It's just, it's a gross thing. And it's so, so taboo. Not even like, oh, no, we shouldn't do that. It's like, no, we can't.
But even in life or death, it's still frowned down upon because the players, when they, the ones that survived, they actually lied about it. At first, because they were...
I would too,
because they were afraid of the reaction that would happen to them. Like, they would be thought of as monsters. And they slowly, I believe a few months after their return, they carried out a press conference and revealed the true grisly details of how they survived on that mountain. But J.A. Boyan is a really great director. So I'm actually looking forward to seeing it. I think I'll see it this week.
Yeah, you should absolutely watch it. Mm-hmm. It kind of reminded me of... what's that show... Yellow Jackets.
Oh, I've heard that's good. Yeah.
It's not good.
It's not good.
It's not good. The first season is interesting. Like, they pull you in. But the second season was shit. So I feel like that show tried to do what this movie did with the story. But they couldn't follow through. But Society of the Snow, highly recommend.
J.A. Boyena, he made this great movie with Carey Mulligan about a kid. I think it's When a Monster Calls, it's called. Hold on, let me double check it. So it's about this kid who's getting over the death of his father, and then all of a sudden this monstrous giant tree shows up on his in his backyard, and it's an incredible coming of age story, and it's called A Monster Calls. Fantastic. If you haven't seen it, add it to your watch list for anything that's like coming of age about family, because it's really wonderful. I love that movie. I dude, that movie broke me. It broke me. Oh, my God. Speaking of a movie that did not break me, though, was Surf's Up, which we watched on Discord.
That's a mockumentary one, right?
Yeah. So I'd heard of, I knew of this movie's existence. I never saw it. And we brought it up on Letterboxd last week. And since then, everyone's been like, oh, we should watch Surf's Up. Let's watch Surf's Up. So I was like, cool, let's do it. I'm down for a good time. And it was really funny. It was cute. Came out 2007, and you can tell also because of the voice cast, because you have Shia LaBeouf, John Heder, and then Jeff Bridges as well as Zooey Deschanel.
Wow.
But it's a great twist on the animated film of it being made in the mockumentary style of a documentary crew is filming a documentary about these penguins.
Right.
And it's really clever. It's really well done. It's cute. It's funny. It's sweet. The cast is great. The animation's fun. It's about surfing, which I've never seen in a animated film before for animals. What's funny about this movie is it's one of those animated films where the animals are, they just act like people and do people things.
Yeah.
But it's not people.
I love when they do people things.
And it works really well. It's a sweet film. I gave it 4 stars.
Nice.
I was like, this is...
I think it's worthy.
And it's got some really good jokes. Like, I cackled out loud a few times, like, hysterically. Like, there are some good ones.
I need to rewatch it.
Good one-liners.
It's been a while.
All right, what do you got next?
Next, I watched Speak No Evil.
Oh, I heard about this, the horror film.
It made me so uncomfortable. I mean, that's the goal of it. But it puts you in these situations where you wonder, what would I do?
Yeah. What country was this made in?
Well, there were Dutch and Danish, so I don't know where it was made.
Okay, it could be either one of those. Yeah. Those languages are pretty interchangeable.
Yeah. But I thought it was a great idea. The ending was brutal. I almost wish they did a little more. But
Denmark.
Denmark.
Yeah, made in Denmark.
Okay. But yeah, I highly recommend watching that.
It's on Netflix or...
I actually watch it on Shudder.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I remember it came out a couple months ago and a lot of people were talking about it. I never got around to seeing it because I heard mixed things pretty much from everyone.
Yeah. I think it's because of the ending, how they ended it.
But up until then, it's a really... Because it's about like what this couple discovers, that a village is trying to bring forth the Antichrist or something. Something like that? Or a demon?
Bro, no.
No, I'm way off.
Way off. I think you're thinking of another one.
What's the quick synopsis of it? Like, log line.
Quick synopsis. A family meets another family. They both have, like, one child, and they form a friendship while vacationing in Italy.
Mm-hmm.
And then the one that lives in Norway or somewhere invites the other family to go. And then... There are just these uncomfortable situations or conversations where no one really... Well, the one family is pretty blunt or straightforward and then makes the other family uncomfortable. But the other family, they don't know how to react. And then strange things are happening. They don't really know what to do.
And then, like, the real motivations truth. Slowly get revealed, basically?
Yes. All right. There's a climax of it.
All right, we don't want to spoil it too much, but...
Oh, God.
Sounds interesting. It sounds interesting. Yeah. Maybe I'll watch it because, I mean,
you should.
We've yet to have, like, much good or eight horror so far this year at all.
I would say that it's a psychological thriller.
Not so much a horror? The poster makes it look like it's like a graphic horror movie.
Yeah, it's not.
So it's, okay. So, okay, maybe that's what's happening.
Yeah.
Because the trailer and the poster make it look like it's fucked up, bloody, gory, wild. So maybe people...
Is that a spoiler to say that?
No. I'm actually glad you said that. So okay, I can walk into it with like different expectations.
Yes. So I was kind of edge of my seat the whole time because I thought it was going to get really brutal and bloody.
Yeah.
But it doesn't.
I mean, that poster makes it look like it's an Evil Dead movie, essentially. Yeah, it's like a person about to hit themselves with an axe.
Yeah.
Okay. So I'm glad actually, maybe I'll walk into it with, maybe that's affected people's expectations when they walk into it.
I mean, horror is such a broad genre that it's hard to know.
But also, you don't want to mismarket your movie.
Exactly.
It's important to show the people, like, to present them, this is what this movie's going to be like tonally.
May I just also add that that's how I felt with Parasite. Because I watched it when it, like, first came out, and it was only a few theaters had it. And I thought we were going to go see a horror movie. And I'd never heard of Parasite, nothing about it. So the whole time I was waiting for, like, some demon or monster, some evil. And it never happened. But, you know, obviously.
I think you're right. I think they did cut that trailer with the horror vibe.
I thought it was going to be like a ghost story or something.
I think you're right. I think I remember that. But, I've been a Bong Joon-ho fan since I was a kid. He was really the first international director I started watching. It was The Host when he came out with that in, like, 2016 or something.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and then I was just hooked on his films. And so I was already just, like...
You knew it.
I knew I was going to see the movie. It was going to be great because it was him. But I can see why people who didn't know him or have familiarity with him, they wouldn't know that he probably would never make a straight up horror movie, like a horror movie.
Yeah.
His movies can be horrific.
I don't even know who directed. It was these friends I had made, brand new, and they're like, "Oh, let's just go see a horror movie." And then I walked into the theater, like I didn't know
the title. The title too, yeah.
I didn't know what it was called.
Mm.
So yeah.
I actually saw that movie in the theater you went to today.
Oh yeah,
Los Feliz.
Did you go or see in the small theater, like the?
It was the smaller. Yeah, it was like literally opening night in LA of that movie. I used to live in that neighborhood, so I like going to that theater and also La Vista.
It's very cute.
Yeah. All right. Next up, I have a Robert Altman film, The Long Goodbye. And Robert Altman is just one of the great American directors. And I gave this film 4.5 stars. Not
the
2.5.
Film noir one?
This is it's a PI movie.
Oh.
Private investigator movie.
Okay.
It's got a noirish tone for sure.
Okay.
It definitely feels old noir mixed with the contemporary filmmaking style of Robert Altman in the 70s. And he's just one of the most visually interesting directors of his time. There's a reason why Paul Thomas Anderson basically emulated him in his early career. And this movie in particular influenced Punch Drunk Love. So you know how Punch Drunk Love, Adam Sandler just wears a blue suit with a red tie the whole time? So this character, he got it from this character, Elliot Gould's character in The Long Goodbye. He just wears that the whole film. Mm-hmm. And also there's a couple of scenes in grocery stores. And it's really funny. Tonally, it just feels like an old movie, in an old investigator movie. And it just toes that line perfectly. It's got really interesting characters and a fun twist at the end that I adored the movie. The movie was very good up until the ending, and that became amazing.
So that's why you gave it 2.5 stars.
Yeah, 2.5 stars. I hated it. No, but so it was the absolute opposite of what happened with you with Speak No Evil, where the movie was very good, and then that ending just put it way over the top and just made it sensational and fantastic. And after like the credits rolled and I was smiling, I was like, that was amazing. Wow. I can't believe that's how it ended. And it was so unexpected. That kind of ending, just when it gets you, it's great because you don't see it coming. It was the last thing I expected to happen. It was fantastic. I loved it.
You're so good at talking about movies without spoiling them.
Because I've been doing it for a while.
I'm like trying to just pick at it a little bit, but then if I talk anymore, I'm just going to talk about it.
Believe me, we got a lot of flack like the first year of this podcast of spoiling stuff for people. Man, so we've really like ironed that out. It's tough. It's tough to talk about a movie.
Like talking around it, because I'm not good at talking around it.
Yeah, it's a challenge. It is. But we learned from messing up a lot.
Yeah.
So don't worry. Don't be too hard on yourself. All right, what do you got next?
Next, Speak No Evil kind of reminded me of Coherence a little bit. So I rewatched Coherence.
Didn't you tell me to get that on?
Maybe.
Did you tell me to watch that?
Probably, because I fucking love that movie. Uh-huh. And I forgot how much I love that movie until I watched it. And I'm like, this is so genius. And it looks low budget and it feels low budget, but in the best ways.
It works because it's low budget.
Yeah.
It's high concept, low budget.
High concept.
And it's like when you think of sci-fi movies this century, it's like up there.
Mm-hmm.
It's so good. And it really comes down to like the brilliant concept.
Yes.
It's so genius.
That's where I say your foundation is the most important thing. The bones are the most important.
Mm-hmm.
Just because your film looks great, or honestly, even like great acting can't save an empty story.
Exactly.
And
I
so
mean,
this
that,
had
yeah.
nothing but, I think, you know, fine acting.
Visually, it's just shot very simply.
It's shot on like an iPhone 3.
It's shot like like a normal person shot it, like a non-filmmaker.
Like you were there, almost.
Exactly. It's all practical. And then it's just nothing fancy with the camera work.
No, nothing.
And the actors are all just like,
there's actors.
Basically just like, they're like B-level actors.
But the one, did you ever watch Buffy the Vampire Slayer?
I never did.
Oh my God. Okay,
I remember seeing
it.
Oh, I've seen it,
show.
But I never watched it.
I loved that show. But one of the actors, he was like one of the main characters in Buffy.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, yeah, I loved Coherence. I think I gave it a 4.
I gave it a 4 stars as well, just because it just didn't quite hit the...
I mean, 5 stars is a lot, and then some things just aren't 5 stars.
Yeah, it just didn't hit that like outstanding all-time sci-fi, like great, 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 great sci-fi. Yeah. It was very great. It was very good sci-fi.
Yeah.
And I thought it was just...
Oh,
they
brilliant.
They did a great job balancing the huge idea
mm-hmm.
with the low-scale context of the storytelling in the filmmaking. And once you learn pretty much what's going on, you're like, holy shit.
Yeah, because you're like, wait, what? You're trying to figure out.
There's so many mysteries.
Out before them, yes.
Every 2 minutes, there's like a new mystery and there's a new thing to question.
Yeah.
Or a new event happened or a new reveal.
Like, you can't figure it out. Because I was sitting there and I was like, I kind of forgot what these little hints or things were.
Yeah.
And I was trying to figure it out with them. And you, there's no way to figure it out until they do.
They did a great job of really putting you into the shoes of those characters.
Yes.
It was just, I love that movie. And I'm glad I watched it because I think it was you. But also I've gotten, I mean, over the years, so many DMs of people recommending Coherence. Mm-hmm. And then I was like, fuck it, I'm going to put it on. And I was like, why did I wait so long to see this movie?
Yeah.
It's one of those movies where like you're embarrassed to tell people you finally saw it because it's been so long.
I guess, never feel embarrassed.
I did.
As you should.
All right. So you gave it 4 stars?
4 stars.
Nice. I gave that 4 stars too. All right. Next up is my final watch of the week, which was Wait Until Dark, which is a really fantastic Audrey Hepburn film, co-starring Alan Arkin as the baddie. And my God, Alan Arkin has made a name for himself of being like such an old reliable actor the last 20 years, but of being like an older gentlemanly kind of guy and just very sweet and very funny. And he's Little Miss Sunshine and Argo and so many great performances the last 20 years, but he's never been, that I've seen, a villain. He's always been somebody that, it's like how Robin Williams was great at playing like dads and father figures.
Yeah.
If he wasn't a dad, playing a father figure of someone that you can trust. And he just had, Alan Arkin just has that. You see him on screen and you're like, I could trust my life with that guy. Or he just seems like a genuinely decent person, no matter the role.
No.
And Wait Until Dark, oh my God, he's just one of the most ruthless, interesting movie villains I have ever seen. And I can't believe I had never even watched this movie before because he's that good as a villain. Like, I would put him, if I had a list of 25 all-time movie villains, I would put Alan Arkin in Wait Until Dark on that list.
You should actually do that.
I should. That would be a fun list.
Not including, like, superheroes and villains, but, like, yeah everything.
Maybe, else. Like, lesser-known movie villains.
Yeah, or just, like, antagonists in general.
Because it's a brilliant concept. So it's Terrence Young who made it, and he made a bunch of Bond films in the 60s and 70s. This is kind of like, I wouldn't call it a horror film, but it's definitely a thriller, like almost a horror thriller. It can be very scary. So Audrey Hepburn plays a blind woman who is being duped by two con artists and one criminal. And so what's basically happened is her husband accidentally got a hold of a doll which had tens of thousands of dollars worth of heroin in it. And the criminals think that the doll is in her apartment. And so the whole thing is trying to figure out, where is the doll? Does she have it? Does she know what's even in the doll? As well as trying to keep them at bay. And it's so suspenseful. It's brilliant. It's basically a one-location movie. It's based on a play from the writer. And so other than the first scene, which is at an airport, the rest of the film is just in her apartment and on the street outside of her apartment. It's just basically the Audrey Hepburn show, just destroying the screen like she always did. She was such a movie star. And I love the film. It's really great. It's unpredictable. It's perfectly executed. And Alan Arkin, oh my God, what a fucking performance.
Now, did I hear you say that Alan Arkin is a baddie?
Yes, he's a baddie.
Do you know what a baddie is?
British baddie, sorry. An English baddie.
I'm like an IG baddie with the fat ass.
Sorry, I got English slang in my head right now. Alan Arkin's the villain.
That's our baddie.
You might think he's a baddie if you saw the movie.
Let me watch
the movie. He's creepy looking. He's got like straight black hair with like flat bangs, you know, like that.
Hell no.
He's very creepy looking.
Yeah.
But man, it's so good. If you want to watch like a really great classic suspense thriller, definitely add Wait Until Dark onto your watch list, everyone.
Remind me to bring up a story I have
relating
to that on the Patreon episode, okay?
All right.
Yeah, it's...
No, I want to hear it.
It's illegal.
Oh, no. All right.
Okay.
Well, you have two movies left, so let's get into those.
I have two.
What do you got?
Innes Men. Was my next one.
Oh, I've heard of that.
Is it Ennis or Innes?
This is a horror film as well, right?
I hated it.
I've heard pretty bad things from it. How do you spell it?
E-N-Y-S.
E-N-Y-S. Y-S. Okay, I remember the trailer and being like, what was that? Okay, yeah, this is all coming back to me.
Yeah. There's a way to do art house that is still good and holds a story. This felt like they were trying to waste my time and put me to sleep. At 30 minutes, I was falling asleep. And it's like 2 p.m.
All right, so it's about a wildlife volunteer on an uninhabited island off the British coast who descends into a terrifying madness that challenges her grip on reality and pushes her into a living nightmare. Sounds like kind of reminiscent of The Lighthouse.
It does not. It's that's what I was thinking when I was watching it. It wanted to be what The Lighthouse is.
Oh, that's, but I mean,
failed so terribly.
It's hard to pull that abstract surrealist filmmaking horror tone off. And Eggers is someone who can do that, but
it couldn't even hold a candle to it. And also the lighting was off.
It looks like it was shot in 16mm. So was it very grainy?
It was very grainy, but yeah. I thought it was shot beautifully. I thought it was really, really cool.
Uh-huh.
But that cannot save the movie.
Yeah. Man. Yeah, I just got a 3.1 on Letterboxd, so you're not alone. What'd you give it for a rating?
I think I gave it 2.5.
Ooh.
And it was only 2.5 because it looked good.
I remember the trailer. I saw it a couple of times in theaters, and I was like, what was that? But also, like, I was very intrigued, too. But then reactions started coming out, and I saw really nothing positive about it at all, so I was like, man, I think I should just skip this one.
Yeah, I don't recommend watching it. It's a nothing film, no offense. Mm-hmm.
Everybody seems to agree with you.
Yeah, I mean, if you like art house and just watching things happening for no reason, then sure. I think you'll enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. But I might check it out. It looks visually interesting.
It's visually very cool, and I take inspiration from it as far as like how they shoot things and the framing.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, as far as the story goes, it doesn't read anything at all. All
right.
No offense.
But I honestly completely forgot that movie existed.
I was really excited because I saw someone post about it. You know those people who say like, oh, here are the really weird movies of this year and like the cool movies or I don't
sure,
know.
Yeah.
So I watched that off that list and I was like, what the hell are they talking about? They were paid.
Oh my God. All right. What do you got for your last watch of this week?
My last watch was Poor Things. Just watched it and then came straight here.
Overall initial reaction, tell me.
Fucking stunning.
Mm-hmm.
So cool. The world building was so unique and playful and imaginative. And the story, Frankenstein's monster's monster.
Mm-hmm.
Sick. I don't like gore really, but I could bear it for this one. But Emma Stone's acting was amazing.
She's so good.
But I was telling you, like, I was worried because I knew what the character was going to do, like how it was going to go. And I was really hoping that she could commit and hold on to it. And she absolutely did. Mark Ruffalo is hilarious. And it's so weird to see him naked. Never want to see that again.
He is quite naked in that movie.
Yeah,
I know Emma got all the attention online, but Mark Ruffalo... Mark, his ass good. And balls are out quite a lot.
I saw way too many dicks. And I think that's the only reason why I would not rewatch it, because I don't want to see all those dicks.
Well, I will say I do appreciate sex in movies when it's done for a reason, and it is done for a very good reason in the film.
100%.
Multiple times.
I will say, though, I could have done without a few of the sex scenes because I feel like they didn't serve a purpose, or it would have been better without it.
I agree, because so there's two main sequences of montage-esque sex sequences, and they both serve very important purposes. Mm-hmm. However, I would say the second one in the second half of the film, I also agree, it lingered way too long.
That's way too long.
It was like 15 minutes of it, and I was like, we're still here?
Yeah.
So I totally agree, and for me...
It felt boring. Like, how do you make sex boring?
It got a little redundant. Like, we understood the theme, we understood the message, we understood what is going on here and what Bella's doing, but they just another one and another one and another one.
And it wasn't even just because like, oh, sex, no, but it just, again, felt redundant. Like, let's get the story going. There's so many more interesting things that you're doing.
Yeah, right. I lost my real interest in it after a while. So I'm completely with you there. But also it's just wholly original, and especially in this slate of movies of 2023, it's just in a league of its own. I think it's going to win production design.
It needs to.
It's going
to
win costuming.
Costuming and was so fun. I so loved good. It so much.
So good. And then also hair and makeup, because that Willem Dafoe makeup.
Willem Dafoe, my guy.
I the love burps.
Him. Oh, my God. I was like, what the fuck is he doing?
Whoa. Like a toad. It was like the second one they showed. The third one they showed, it was like in the third act of the film, and I was just like, they're still doing it. It's great. Ugh. The movie's hilarious, yeah. Especially the first 30 minutes. It's really so funny. Movie. And right off the bat, what I saw in Emma Stone's performance, I immediately thought in my head, she definitely has kids. Because the way she basically, Bella Baxter is growing up from childhood. And I was like, Emma Stone absolutely has children because James and I grew up helping take care of kids, mm-hmm. our nieces and nephews. And if I could tell she grew up around, she knew the space of how kids moved,
yes.
how kids spoke, how kids interacted. She didn't just research the role. I was like, she definitely has kids in her home. I could tell.
Yeah.
It was 100%, like, it was so spot on with the movement, with the physicality, with just the way the mind's working, where her attention is, what's giving her attention, how she's reacting to things. I was like, she didn't just research kids. She has kids. And yeah. then I Googled it. She does have a couple of kids. So I was like, that doesn't surprise me at all.
The only thing, her walking, if it wasn't such a fantastical, whimsical world, her movement, I don't think, would have sold me. Because it does get better because, like, obviously she's, like, learning how to walk.
Yeah,
I know that.
Posture and everything, yeah.
But it's just something that's a bit too theatrical about it if the world wasn't so fantastical.
Yeah, the whole thing is whether the lenses, mm-hmm. especially in the black and white first act sequence where it's just all incredibly wide lenses and fisheyes too. And then when she does leave the world, it's surrealist and fantastical and colorful, and they go to a real city in Spain, but it looks nothing like a real city that we know.
What city in Spain?
It was what's it called? Hold on.
It was Lisbon.
Lisbon, thank you.
Portugal.
Lisbon, Portugal. Anyways.
Oh my god.
Hey, I don't have a geography podcast.
Y'all heard it here first. Anthony does not know where the fuck he is.
Lisbon, Portugal, as I said.
I'm like, did I fall asleep?
But it's not our Lisbon.
Yeah.
And no. I mean, you could say it probably is, but in her eyes, that's how it feels.
I wondered if the set design / the colors were going to become more dollar world-like, because I thought that it was so fantastical because she's a baby.
Mm-hmm. She's just a baby.
She's just a baby. I don't have kids. So I thought as she matured in her brain that the world would get more dull,
mm-hmm.
but it didn't. So I'm glad that was all real. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I think that it's...
I thought we were seeing it through her eyes, like how like bright and vibrant and like cool it was.
But also the sets and environments they created also matched the tone of what she was experiencing. So in Lisbon, it's pleasure, it's passion, it's you know, food, sex, all that. So we get the warmth. And then when we're on the cruise ship, we get that blue background. She's learning about death. She's learning about suffering.
Yeah.
So the tones of the skies and architecture, the whole production, matched her experiences emotionally as well.
I thought I was just so done up just because it was through her eyes. I thought we were going to come back to like this earth.
Reality. I think that she did by the end in the yard because she's wearing a tonally.
She wore normal a beige
outfit.
Yeah.
And she had her hair just middle part, very simple.
Yeah. But the animals, things are still true.
Yeah.
I just thought she was crazy or just.
So I think that Yorgos wanted to be like, this is what the city looks like in the mm-hmm. child's eyes.
Yeah. Yeah.
But it was just so done. It was so well done. And the craftsmanship's amazing.
Yeah. I've never seen a woman's story be told like that.
Mm-hmm.
Like the woman experience. And also, you know, a child's experience of learning something new every day or doing this for the first time.
So in terms, because it's actually based on a novel that was written by a man. Mm-hmm. And then it was directed by a man. So in terms of a woman's story about such big themes mm-hmm. in womanhood, do you think it was well done and executed by the men?
I thought it was well done. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
That's good to hear.
Yeah. Good job, man.
Also, Ruffalo.
You can do something.
Ruffalo
right?
crushed it. He's so funny in that.
So hilarious.
I love the monologue he gives when he's in the cell and he's just like lying facing the wall and he gives that monologue about like the demon. She's going to suck every bit of life out of
him. He sits up and like farts. I'm like, what the fuck?
Oh my God. Oh my God, he's so funny.
I've never seen him like that.
If it wasn't for Downey, he'd win supporting. That's how good he is.
I think he should win.
Hey, he's great.
I think he should win.
People voted for him. That's how he got nominated.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I thought he was wonderful. But if it came out on a different year, he'd have it hands down. But he's got very stiff comps. Downey's taking every award that's available.
I'm going to put $2 on Ruffalo.
You want to bet $20?
No. Bro, have you not? I $2 can't even isn't get the a fucking bet. Patreon.
Oh, we'll give you a free membership. You're a producer. That's like in The Social Network where she's like, why is your Facebook status say you're single? He's like, I don't know how to change it. She's like, so you're telling me you founded Facebook, but you don't even know how to change your status?
It's hard out there, okay? It's hard.
No, we'll give you a free Patreon access. You're part of the company.
We can wager that. Nah, actually, it's fine. You just give it to me.
Actually, yeah, I think I can just do it for free. I'm not sure. I'll have to look into it. I think I might have to pay for it. We'll see. Speaking of, join our Patreon to help support the show. You get a bunch of access to so many episodes. We're at over 200 episodes of bonus episodes. And then the Godfather episodes, which the Godfather here have access to. And if you want the ad-free version of the show, all you got to do is sign up for the $5 tier. And that gets you all the episodes without a single ad to listen to. You don't have to hear James's nasally voice reading off ads.
James, I appreciate your nasally voice.
Oh my God, I'm digging into him today. He's not here to defend himself.
Oh, he'll defend himself when he comes back. He's beating the shit out of you.
Also, subscribe, like, leave us a review on Apple. It's so appreciated, as well as a 5-star rating on Spotify. In the meantime, stay tuned for our upcoming episodes. We got Kill Bill, Movies from Memory, coming out next week. It's going to be a good one. See you next time, everyone.